Thank you very much. First of all, I'd like to thank the organizers to give me a chance to talk here. Today I'm going to talk about this title, how standard model can appear from the matrix model. Well, let me begin with an elementary introduction. As is well known, that the standard model of particle physics is very successful, and it agrees with all experimental data with high precision. But it includes no quantum gravity, and it's also too arbitrary, which means that we can't explain our space-time dimensionality, gauge group structure or matter contents, and values of free parameters. And string theory can solve these problems, and so is expected to be the ultimate theory of everything. And there have been many works about obtaining standard model from string theory, such as Calabi-Yau compactifications in heterotic superstrings, orbifolds, intersecting d-branes, and so on. But the serious problem in string theory is that it has too many vacua with various spacetime dimensionalities and matter contents. And this situation is sometimes called landscape. And what's worse is that we cannot compare them dynamically, and we don't know which vacuum is chosen. So obviously, we need a more fundamental, a kind of master theory. But we don't know what it is, of course. But we have some candidates for it. They are string field theories, gauge gravity dualities, and matrix models. And today's talk focuses on matrix models, and in particular, the IKKT matrix model. Well, IKKT matrix model, or 2B matrix model, was introduced by Tsuchiya and Nishimura already, so I will just briefly introduce it, review it. It's a reduced model from 10-dimensional SUN Yamils to zero dimensions, so its action is written like this, where A and Psi are N by N Hermitian matrices, and mu stands for 10-dimensional vector index, and Psi is also 10-dimensional Majorana wire spinner, although I suppress the spinner index. And take commutators and take trace, and this gives the action. And after taking suitable large n limit, it gives a non-perturbative formulation of superstring theory. That's a conjecture. And there have been many works about analyzing space-time structures from Euclidean 2B matrix model. And well, from Tsuji algebra, diagonal elements of bosonic matrices A mu are interpreted as space-time. And so their distribution gives space-time structure. For example, if they distribute in a manifold like a pancake, which extends in four dimensions and shrinks in six dimensions, it means that our space-time is four-dimensional. And in fact, an effective theory for diagonal elements shows a kind of polymer picture, and all the eigenvalues are connected by the bonds, so the system is infrared finite. That's why dynamical analysis for space-time structures is possible. And from various analyses based on polymer dynamics, Gaussian expansion methods, and Monte Carlo simulations, four-dimensional space-time was expected to appear. But recent results shows that three-dimensional space-time is favored. And another problem is that it's difficult to obtain huge anisotropy between four dimensions and six dimensions. So it's more like a rugby ball rather than a pancake. So that's why Lorentzian 2B matrix model was considered, and it's, as is already shown by the Monte Carlo simulations, expanding three spatial dimensions were obtained. Okay, so then next, let's consider matter on the space-time, and in particular, how the standard model matter content can appear from matrix model. And I will show an example by using the rest of my talk, but it's just an example. There can be some other solutions. It's just an example. And importance of these studies is as follows. First, such a path connecting the standard model and matrix model may give us a guide for moving from either side. From the bottom-up approach, we have many phenomenological models beyond the standard model. So such a path may give us a hint which way to go. And on the other hand, from the top-down approach, in order to justify or modify the formulation of the matrix model, the fact that we can obtain the standard model matter content at low energy gives us a criterion. And secondly, we will study dynamics of matrix models and show which solution is favored or chosen. And these kind of studies are possible because the matrix model has definite action and also measure. So that's an advantage of matrix model over the ordinary string theories. Okay, so let's consider a mechanism to obtain chiral fermions, because chiral fermions is an important ingredient of the standard model. Well, the standard way is the following. We first introduce non-trivial topology in the extra dimension, which gives chiral zero modes in the extra dimensions. And they give chiral spectrum on our space-time. Well, this is just a standard way. I'm not saying nothing. I'm saying nothing special. This is a standard way. for example, in the Carabiel case, Euler characteristics gave non-trivial topology, and in the case of OIFOs, some boundary conditions, and in the case of intersecting D-brains, intersection number gave non-trivial topology. So it's nothing special. But now I will give two comments concerning these two steps.
But we don't know what the six dimensional will be from
your... Yeah, there are many solutions. Yeah. Yeah. So actually, in the matrix model case, I think there are many solutions. But the advantage is that we can study dynamics. So now I will give two comments concerning two steps. The first step seems to be trivial, since we know Kier-Singer's index theorem. The theorem says that the Dirac index, the difference between the numbers of the chiral zero modes, is given by the topological charge of the background. But it becomes non-trivial in regularized theories with finite degrees of freedom due to doublers, Nielsen binomials, noble theorem. However, in the lattice gauge theories, this problem was solved by introducing a Ginsburg-Wilson relation. And the idea of using Ginsburg-Wilson relation was also applied to finite matrix model and non-commutative geometry. Here, finite means that the degrees of freedom is finite. And in the language of matrix models, the size of the matrix is finite. And second comment is about S2 or some kind of embedding in the 2B matrix model. Well, As is well known, the fuzzy two-sphere is represented by SU2D algebra, so we can embed S2 in the R3. We can also embed S2 times S2 in R6. And we can also put monopole in the center of S2, which gives magnetic flux penetrating the S2. However, unfortunately, even though the 2D matrix model is chiral in 10 dimensions, and chiral zero modes arise on S2 times S2, we couldn't obtain chiral fermions on our four-dimensional space-time. Because the remainder, remaining dimensions, N10 over N4 times S2 times S2, interrupt or prevent the propagation of information from extra dimensions to our space-time. Well, this always happens in the naive dimensional reduction. Okay. This remainder dimension corresponds to the normal direction to the sphere. So we should consider
Excuse me?
Yes.
Very, very naive question. For the matrix model, we haven't got the space-time yet. So what space-time are you talking about at the moment? Is this supposed to be emerging?
We just assume four-dimensional space-time. We live on four-dimensional space-time, and extra dimensions is S2 times S2 in this case. But in this embedding, we couldn't obtain parallel fermions on our space-time.
You have since mentioned why you take two S2s and not three S2s.
Pardon?
Why you not compactify all six? You kind of use four and two are some bending.
You have two embedded in flat space, that's what happens. Right? The matrices are embedded in flat space, so to make an S2 in flat space, you need three elements.
No, I understand. Yeah, there is an M4 and six others.
Yes.
So we want to compactify them all.
Yes, yes.
So you compactify four and two remain pending, right? So you also need to compactify the why not another S2.
Yes, so that's a remainder dimension I said. And we can consider thickness of the S2 and we can also encode some topological structures to this direction. Then this problem will be resolved.
Can I just repeat my question? If there's no space time in the matrix model action,
yes,
what space
time
are you talking about at the moment?
Well, I'm assuming some background.
It's a discussion of previous talks.
The space becomes
eigenvalues of the space.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so there was no coordinates in the action.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's emerging themselves.
A priori, there's no space time. But eigenvalues gives space time. And we can also encode some structures in the extra dimension. Now I'm considering this structure.
We're supposed to get used to limiting
modular
spaces.
Okay.
Yes, this other question, why don't you compactify all six dimensions?
Well, so that's why we should consider topological configurations entire six extra dimensions. That's why I considered Floridal compactification to T6. Okay. And from infinite Hermitian matrices, as in the 2D matrix model, the toroidal compactifications can be made by imposing this kind of periodic boundary conditions of matrices. And formulations in terms of unitary matrices can also be given, where the unitary matrices B mu are related to Hermitian matrices A mu, like this. And here, we can also make a finite matrix formulation, finite. And in the following,
Same question. So in Taylor's prescription, you also have to introduce impose a restriction for fluctuations. So that's a very different from just assuming some background.
We also assume periodic boundary conditions to the fluctuations. Both backgrounds and fluctuations.
It sounds as if you are thinking some different theory, because if you just assume a background and consider all fluctuations, that's very natural. But how do you obtain such constraint for fluctuations?
Well, we by the unitary matrix, or in the Hamiltonian case, we.
So if you consider unitary matrix model,
all of the matrix.
That condition is naturally introduced, but I'm not sure if you that sounds as if you are thinking of some different model, which is not necessarily the unitary matrix model. Or do you somehow expect that? Constraint for fluctuation also
appears
as
dynamical
mechanism.
Yeah. In the case of Taylor, we impose these kind of constraints for all of the matrices, right?
Both
on background and fluctuation. But and also in the unitary case, V mu includes background and also fluctuations.
Question: why you should consider the subset of fluctuations that existed in the original model?
That's a good point. That's a good point. Yeah. I just assume this kind of. That's a good point. Okay. So anyway, we assume toroidal compactations. Why toroidal compactation occurs is a future problem.
So the non-commutative torus arises simply because you're using matrices to represent.
Yes. Yeah.
So it's naturally non-commutative.
Yeah. Well, in the following, we would use a unitary matrix formulation for non-commutative torus. Though such details of formulation, whether the matrix size is finite or infinite, or the non-commutative or commutative, are actually not necessary ingredient for obtaining Cayley-Fleming standard model. But we consider the non-commutativity because it naturally appears for matrix models. Right? Non-commutativity naturally appears for matrix models. So we consider non-commutative torus.
I thought it was hard to get Cayley-Fleming with toroidal compactifications. That's another thing that's confusing me.
Cayley-Fleming?
Yeah.
That I will show later. Okay, I will show by introduction class.
I think Simon's question is about conventional or ordinary string theory, right? Compactification. If you do toroidal compactification.
Oh, I see. So that's more like an intersecting difference in the torus. Yeah. So that's all about my introduction. In the next section, so I will introduce matrix model formulation of non-commutative torus, and I will also show that Ginsburg-Wilson relation and an index theorem is actually satisfied. And then I will introduce topological configurations and show that they give non-zero index and Cayley-Fleming on our space-time. And in section 4, I will show an explicit configuration for two-dimensional torus case and six-dimensional torus case. And then finally, I will show an example that gives a matter content, a standard model matter content. Well, from section 2 to contents from section 2 to section 4 concerns details of non-commutative geometries. So let me move on. Well, in order to see how space-time and matter degrees of freedom are described in matrices, let's recall the situation in Hermitian matrix case. here we first consider non-commutative background which satisfy this kind of Heisenberg algebra, or so-called Moyard plane. Then we decompose bosonic matrix and also Fermi matrix into background and fluctuations. And then the matrix model gives non-commutative field theory. And in the case of type 2D matrix model, this gives non-commutative Yandels. And in the case of unitary matrix, non-commutative background can be given by Hooft-Weyl algebra.
I have a question. Yes. You had non-unitivity in momentum space rather than position space.
Yes.
Is there a reason for that? I mean, that's different. This is like a magnetic field.
Yeah, actually, this is a space-time.
P will be interpreted as coordinates, sorry?
X, this is a P is background of the AMU. This is a coordinate.
It's
coordinate. But, in this interpretation, this gives derivative, actually.
Mm-hmm. Good.
So now I write it P mu. And actually, the dimension is encoded by theta. Okay. So in the case of the unitary matrix, decomposition of the bosonic matrix V mu into the background gamma mu and fluctuation U mu can be also given like this. Here, so gamma mu corresponds to exponential IP, so it's more like a derivative operator or shift operator. So let's start from twisted Eguchi Kawai model, right? And insert the decomposition of V mu into background gamma and the fluctuation U mu, we obtain the second line here. It's just I inserted this decomposition and used this relation. Then we obtain this one. And this is nothing but a non-commutative Flackett action. Here, it's better to review some basics on non-commutative torus. So torus has periodicity of R, so the coordinate operator should be written like this, unitary matrix. And also, if we want to consider some regularized theory with a cutoff epsilon, derivative operators can be written by the shift operator, unitary shift operator like this. And coordinate operator Z and shift operator gamma satisfy this kind of algebra. This shows the non-commutativity of coordinate, and this shows that the gamma is actually a shift operator, or derivative operator. N is the size of torus, or size of the matrix. And then we have a mapping between matrices and functions, which is well known. The product of the matrices corresponds to the star product of the functions. And this shows that gamma is actually a shift, or it generates a translation of the coordinate. And trace of matrices corresponds to the integral over space-time or the summation over the lattice point. Then the last line is obtained by the mapping. This is nothing but the non-commutative Flackett action. And fermions. Fermions can be defined similarly. We first introduce covariant forward and backward difference operator like this. Then, for example, Wilson-Dirac operator can be defined as in the lattice gauge theory. This has the exactly same form as the Wilson-Dirac operator in the lattice gauge theory. And we can also define an overlap Dirac operator like this, where gamma is an ordinary chirality operator, and gamma hat is another chirality operator defined like this. Here, dw shows Wilson-Dirac operator. And both gamma and gamma hat satisfies the relation gamma square and gamma hat square is equal to identity operator, exactly. So that's why we have a Ginsburg-Wilson relation here. By multiplying gamma from the left, it gives gamma minus gamma hat, and by multiplying gamma hat from the right, it gives gamma hat minus gamma. So they cancel exactly, and this is an exact relation on the matrix, on the finite matrix. Then we have, so the index of the Dirac operator becomes a trace of the chirality operators, like this. The trace means a trace of a whole configuration space. And now I give some comments about the right-hand side, the trace gamma plus gamma hat. Well, it's a function of a gauge field configuration because gamma hat includes gauge field. And it takes only integer values since it is a trace of sine operators. And also it was shown that it becomes Chern character in the continuum limit. That's why we call it topological charge, and we call this equation an index theorem.
Can I just one comment? That the index theorem for adjoint fermions is that the index equals two times or four times the topological charge.
Adjoint fermion is, it depends on
the number there. So only for fundamental fermions, index equals charge.
Yes.
So for adjoint, there's a number. And in lattice gate, I mean, the overlap simulations have shown that at finite lattice spacing, the index is not always divisible by 4. In the continuum limit, it will be. But at finite lattice spacing, the index theorem only holds for fundamental fermions, because that is just integer equal integer. Higher dimensional representation, there's a number there, and the index is not always divisible by that number at finite lattice spacing. So in this way, you always get an integer index, a finite lattice spacing, but the charge will not necessarily be integer.
I see, thank you. Thank you. In my case, it vanishes for all configurations.
Okay.
So, because, well, I'm sorry, but in the non-commutative case, once we impose periodic boundary conditions on the theory, then only topologically trivial sect arises. So the topological charge vanishes for all configurations. So we need some new idea, and we have to modify formulation a little bit.
Thanks, Lee. So in the last case, so you should take admissibility concept.
Yeah.
That's
a good point. In our case, we should also impose admissibility conditions. Otherwise, H becomes zero, and this operator is redefined there. And there are some analyses for that, studies about that. So, I introduced topological configurations. They are given by the diagonal matrices. Then with H, here H stands for the number of blocks. And we also decompose the fermion matrix into the blocks in the same way as B mu. So index theorem is satisfied for each block. Because the projection operator to pick up the block AB commute with these operators, gamma, gamma, hat, and B. So, and as I will show in the next section, the index for the block can have non-zero values, although the whole matrix has index zero.
In the usual lattice on the torus, it was difficult to put an instanton notice instant and anti-instant decay here. So you can have lots of pluses and minuses. Total zero. Probably similar.
Yeah. And in the case of non-commutative geometry, the situation becomes worse, and we can't define instanton once we impose periodic boundary conditions. But this kind, the block can have non-zero index.
Blocks are just generously boundary conditions for segments of the matrix.
Well, actually, the block has a kind of twisted boundary conditions in this case. If we impose some kind of background, as I will show later, the off-diagonal blocks has a twisted boundary condition. The situation corresponds to imposing twisted boundary conditions. Okay, so the block can have non-zero index. Before showing this point, let me consider the M4x6 compactifications in the 2B matrix model and show that the topological configurations in that six-dimensional torus indeed is chiral fermions on our space-time. Right, so the block block element of fermion psi A, B, and psi B, A are in the bifundamental representation under the gauge group. And the psi A, B, and psi B, A, opposite side of the diagonal components, are conjugate representations to each other. And for dimensions equal to 2 mod 4, topological charge is a Chern character with degree being an odd integer. Then psi AB and psi BA, which are in the conjugate representations, have opposite topological charges and hence opposite indices. So the corresponding chiral zero modes have opposite qualities. So we write them psi R and psi L.
Excuse me, do you have a still supersymmetry at this stage?
No. We consider lattice formulations.
Yeah.
It explicitly breaks.
I see.
Yeah, but we can expect it will be restored in the continuum limit. So considering the spinners on our four-dimensional spacetime as well, we can consider these four types of wide fermions. And actually, these two are charge conjugates to each other, and so are these two. And because 2D matrix model has 10-dimensional Majorana wide spinner, we now impose these conditions on them. And by imposing wide conditions, two spinners surrounded by circle are chosen. And the four-dimensional spinner phi R and phi L are in different representations under the gauge group. So they already give a chiral spectrum on our four-dimensional space-time. But since they are charge conjugates to each other, it gives a doubling.
Can I use blocks as arising from some sort of orbifold projection? Or?
Yeah, it's similar to that, but we didn't impose orbifold conditions. So both of the blocks appear. And but by imposing wide conditions, we can have a chiral spectrum on M4.
Can you tell me, what is it that determines the blocks you pick? I'm lost. I missed something, I think.
Huh? The diagonal, is that right, in this block?
Yeah, we just impose diagonal, block diagonal background.
I see, okay. Background,
yes. And consider the block elements. And furthermore, if we impose Majorana condition these two guys are identified and the doubling is also resolved, then the chiral spectrum on our four-dimensional space-time is obtained. Okay, so now I give an explicit configuration. First, let's consider the two-dimensional plural case. Again, the matrix B mu is a block diagonal matrix with H blocks. And each block is a tensor product of two factors. And the second factor is an identity operator with P dimensions. And they give gauge group UP1, UP2, da-da-da, UPH. And the first factor, gamma mu, represent non-commutative tori with magnetic flux, Q1, da-da-da, QH, which are the explicit forms of gamma will be shown just later. So as a whole, the mu is specified by H pairs of integers, PA and QA. So in order to show a gamma, non-commutative torus with magnetic flux, let me recall the Morita equivalence. This says that gauge theory with magnetic flux on a non-commutative torus is equivalent to gauge theory with vanishing flux on another inequivalent non-commutative torus. And the original and dual torus are inequivalent are actually related by this relation. Here theta is a non-commutative parameter and L is the period or the size of the matrix. And actually finite matrix formulation were given. As I said, coordinate and shift operators on non-commutative torus satisfy this algebra. And explicit representations in UN matrices are given by using Tofu's shift and clock matrices like this. So Z and gamma, explicit forms of Z and gamma can be specified by these integers, N, J, M. And we specify the dual torus by a set of four integers, N, M, J, K, which satisfy the Diophantine equation. And we also specify the original torus by these four integers. And actually, dual torus and original torus can be related by the integer Q like this. And these are inverted to these pink equations. These two equations and these two equations are equivalent, just. Then consider fermion and decompose into blocks as before. And integer for the off-diagonal block psi turns out to become QA minus QB. Actually, this can be shown by using these relations, but it's a little bit subtlety. So the index for the block should be given by the difference between QA and QB. And actually, we verified it numerically. Next, let's consider six-dimensional torus. Then the configuration is given like this. Again, it has H blocks, and each block is a tensor product of four factors. The first factor represents the first two-dimensional torus, and the second factor, second torus, and the third factor, the third C2. And the final factor represents a gauge group. So a whole configuration is specified by these integers, PA and QAL, where L specifies the T2, which is and the index for off-diagonal block psi AB is given by the product of Q. Okay, so let me give an example of matrix configurations, which gives a standard model matter content. It's more like a phenomenology. Well, number of blocks is taken to be 5. And integer p is taken to be 3, 2, 1, 1, 1, and it will give gauge groups SU 3 times SU 2 times 5U1. And as for integers q, here we write a difference between QA and QA because this is there is only relevant numbers. Just example. Then the product becomes like this. And fermionic matter content are embedded in fermionic matrix psi like this, where Q denotes quark doublets and L lepton doublets, UD quark singlets and UE lepton singlets. And indeed, they have a correct representation under the gauge group. And as I said before, these elements have index 3, so it gives they have generation number 3. And the other blocks denoted by 0 have index 0. So they give no chiral zero modes. So no massless fermions arise on our space-time from this component. Okay, let me summarize. Well, so block diagonal matrices gave topologically non-trivial gauge field configurations. And then off-diagonal blocks of the adjoint fermions can have non-zero Dirac indices. Then chiral fermions and standard model matter content on our four-dimensional space-time can appear from 2D matrix model. Here, the non-zero Dirac index gave generation number 3. And as a future work, in this configuration, we have 5 U1s, and a linear combination of which gives a hypercharge U1. So we should show that only hypercharge U1 remains massless, and the other U1s must become massive by some mechanism. And also, we should consider includes Higgs particles electric symmetry breaking and Lyukar couplings and so on. And there are some related works. And actually, intersecting D-brains also gives chiral fermions and standard model matter content. And these situations are T-dual to the D-brains with magnetic flux on it.
Is it completely dual, or is it like some kind of zero size limit because you just have finite dimensional matrices? I mean.
This is T-dual in the strings level.
So it's a piece of the theory.
So that's a future work. And
but it, could it possibly reconstruct the entire dynamics of the theory? Could the matrix model reconstruct the full space-time dynamics?
Yes, I think it's possible. Our model describes this situation, so maybe it's simple. And also, all force was constructed by matrix models. So I think it's interesting to compare these theories and study. And these studies will give progress for both string theory and matrix models. And we should also search other solutions with various compactifications, gauge groups, matter content. And because torus may be difficult to appear from Hermitian matrices dynamically from the 2D matrix model, we should search more plausible scenario for matrix model configurations, which are more likely to appear dynamically from the matrix model. And eventually, we would like to study dynamics of matrix model, compare the various solutions, and show which solutions are chosen. Dynamic. That's all about my.
So,
yes.
So what's the mechanism of seeing
the
U1 in
matrix and
the other?
Yeah, in the string theory, in the intersecting different cases, Ramon field for the so-called generalized Lynch-Schwarz mechanism cancels the anomaly transition. And but it also gives masses to the U1 gate bottom. So, and in the case of intersecting difference shown by Ibanez et al., they show that by that dynamics, only hypertrophy 1 or B minus L at U1 becomes massless, and the other becomes massive by Ramon-Ramon field exchange. So, I expect some kind of mechanism. In the matrix models.
Is there a room for supersymmetry?
No supersymmetry.
Massive fermions.
Oh, massive fermions? No.
Fermions.
Fermions is massless.
Well, okay, sir.
Because of index. Now, I consider four topological configurations. And this is index. So topology assures the chirality and also masslessness of chiral fermions. Otherwise, they will become massive by radial corrections, even though they are massless at the tree level. So, but now we consider non-Sugi case, so the masslessness of the scalar is difficult to be shown. So that's a problem X and also hierarchy.
So the background is key for all this, right? That's what breaks the data symmetry down, gets you the right representations for the fermions and all this sort of stuff. So is there any understanding of why that background would be picked out?
Oh, that's a future problem.
So there's no modular space.
A modular space? Well,
since you don't have supersymmetry, because then we don't have flat corrections left. Is this a minimum, or is it, I don't know.
Well, I haven't studied it completely yet, but actually we consider the dynamics only for T2 and only for classical conditions. In that case, this shows the classical action for the two blocks. And this axis shows the size of the one as size of this matrix, and fixing the total. And the center point shows the trivial configuration. In fact, the center point is the most stable one, but
like 0 colon and it has the lowest energy.
But actually, the difference between the instanton and the trivial sector is like this, and this can happen in the continuity layer. The difference is not so big. Well, I mean, actually, in the case of non-commutative geometries, the difference of the actions between the instanton sector and the zero sector becomes very large. That's why we couldn't obtain a non-trivial sector from a trivial module. We have to define instanton by module in the non-commutative geometry. However, we now define non-trivial sector by the background of blocks. So that's why the difference between the action becomes tiny. angle. Actually, it's same as the computer space is. Then it's possible that instanton appears in this setting. But analysis of dynamics, well, we should analyze dynamics in future.
So in this kind of setup, you typically obtain bifundamental representation for the matter fields. So that means that you cannot get God theories, like as you find, this kind of setup.
Yeah. We can, if we consider five on one, bifundamental, but extra gate is hidden or something, so we can encode, but standard mode is more likely to be encoded.
And concerning the extra you want, can you do prototypic calculation to justify that four of them becomes massive? And how can you show that you get only U1? How is U1?
Yes, it might be one of the calculations because it's an exchange of Ramon modules. So it should be arise from the one loop calculation in the matrix model.
Well, let's thank the speaker again.